Welcome to the Birthful Podcast. I'm Adriana Losada, and today's show is about choosing your care provider. Finding the care provider that's right for you is the first step towards a great birth experience. So how do you do that? What questions should you ask? And if you're not happy with your current provider, is it too late to switch? Robin Elise Weiss is here to tell us more. Stay tuned. This episode of Birthful is brought to you by Green Chef, a USDA-certified organic company that includes everything you need to cook delicious meals that you can feel good about. For $50 off your first box of Green Chef, go to greenchef.us/birthful. This episode of Birthful is also brought to you by Birthsong Botanicals Postpartum Herb Bath, which supports perineal healing and self-care regardless of how you give birth. Go to birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code Birthful for 10% off. The Birthful Podcast, talking to maternity pros and new parents to inform your intuition. Hello, mighty parents and parents-to-be. Thank you, as always, for all the love you give the show. And if what you hear is helpful, then make sure you subscribe so you don't miss a thing. Remember also, you can support this podcast by supporting its sponsors, which in this week's case are Green Chef and Birthsong Botanicals, and also by becoming an official Birthful Patreon supporter at patreon.com/birthful. As a thank you, Birthful patrons get access to extra content from this and future episodes. So for today's episode, that includes a handout with the questions and considerations suggested today to help you choose your care provider. That way you won't have to take notes. And Birthful patrons now also get access to ad-free episodes. So if you want to learn more, go to patreon.com/birthful. All right, today's renewed episode is with Robin Elise Weiss, who is an author, an amazing and dynamic trainer of both doulas and childbirth educators, and a recognized leader in maternal infant care. Basically, an all-around birth geek. And on top of all that, she also has 8 children. So, yeah. Since this episode first aired, 2 big things have happened for Robin. One is that all or most of her articles from About.com have transitioned to VeryWellFamily.com, since About.com is now .-.com. And it's all kind of name changes and musical chairs, but in any case, I've updated the show note links to take you to the right place. And you'll hear at the end of the show that we talk about her articles on About.com. Pretend we're saying VeryWellFamily.com. The other thing is that Robin is now in charge of the 100% Doula Business Foundation, which is a very exciting leap. And so congratulations to Robin for this new adventure. All right, here we go. Robin, welcome. I'm so happy to have you here today.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited.
And I especially appreciate you taking the time to do this with all you do, because my goodness, I just have one daughter and... And my day is not long enough.
Well, the good news is sometimes you can feed them all at once. So having 8 doesn't necessarily take that much more time out of my day. I just make bigger pots of oatmeal than most people.
Mm-hmm. Sounds good. The 3 of us have a hard time eating together. So maybe we got to buckle down on that and save us time. So today's topic is finding a care provider. And you know, let's start with the basic. Why is it important to find a care provider that's a good fit?
Well, I think one of the things that most people don't understand is that the choice of care provider that you choose is largely going to impact everything that happens from that moment forward, both in how you're cared for in your pregnancy, the testing that happens, the type of questions that you ask and are answered. It really sets the tone for everything moving forward to the postpartum period. And most people think that pretty much everybody gets the same type of care, and that's just quite honestly not true. And when you think about how the vast majority of people choose their care providers for birth, it might be, they pull out their insurance booklet and do just a random, hey, this person's close to me. It might be that you ask your neighbor, hey, who did you use and did you like them? And, you know, they say yes, and you think that's great. But the problem is maybe your idea of what constitutes good care and their idea of what constitutes good care maybe don't match. Or even, I find this one a lot, is that the person who's done your well woman care, your pap smears, your birth control, that just becomes the default. Well, I have a really good relationship with this person and I'll stay with them. And the truth is, we have really different needs from the person who does a yearly pap smear and the person who is going to care for us in pregnancy.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I see that quite often of, you know, this was my OB and, well, they catch babies too, so let's just do this. Or, and then come the consequences that once you're into it and you realize maybe that wasn't the best choice because, as you say, the care then your needs are different. So it seems that even before trying to find a care provider, moms or women need to take a step back and figure out what they want. How can they best do that?
Well, I think for some women, it's a little easier than others, particularly if you've had a baby before. You either had care that you liked or you had care that you wish were a little bit different. And if you have that knowledge going in, then you can say, okay, the provider I use worked really well for me, or I need to find somebody who does something differently. For a mom who's never had a baby before, it can be a little bit trickier because you do want to keep your options open and think a little bit more, and your ideas may change as you learn more. I always encourage people to try and find an early pregnancy class and to take an early pregnancy class. Even in the first few weeks of pregnancy, a lot of the information they go over is great for your entire pregnancy, including nutrition and fitness and just some of those early questions that you want to get answered. But a lot of that also can help you formulate what your ideas look like about pregnancy and birth in general to help you get the idea of this might be what I'm looking for in a care provider.
Mm-hmm. And speaking of the care providers, what are the options out there that provide that difference in care?
Well, generically speaking, the providers that are available would be an obstetrician who is trained in obstetrics and gynecology. Some people use family practitioners who are also trained in well woman care and normal pregnancy and birth. You have nurse midwives who care for normal, healthy, pregnant women and their babies. And then also the direct entry midwife who may have a variety of certifications, including the certified professional midwife credential. And where they practice and with whom they practice will vary state by state.
Mm-hmm. And I think that also, can you speak to how that influences your place of birth and how that is something that can be tied to, you know, how does that affect your outcomes as well?
Certainly. Moms who give birth in birth centers or home birth will typically be cared for by a midwife. And women who are giving birth at home or in a birth center are typically healthy, low-risk women, and they have a much lower incidence rate of having cesarean sections, of using medications, because they would have to transfer to the hospital to receive that type of care. And while it is true that a low-risk, healthy, pregnant woman is going to have a lower cesarean rate in general, we find that the same healthy, low-risk mom who sees an obstetrician in a hospital still has a higher cesarean rate than moms who are not in the hospital or who are being cared for by midwives.
Mm-hmm. And so in terms of the practitioner, you mentioned a little bit of the pros and cons. Can you get deeper into that on how they differ in the care?
Well, again, these are generalities because there are certainly obstetricians who practice very much like midwives, and there are certainly midwives who practice in a more medically oriented sense, which is what makes the interview of the practitioner so important. And I think a lot of times we forget that this is a two-way street. Just because you show up and have an appointment with a person doesn't necessarily mean that you've hired them. And even if you have hired them and you've seen them for several months, even all the way through your pregnancy, you can also fire them. But in general, what most women say would be the differences would be the time that a midwife takes to get to know her clients in terms of lengthier prenatal visits, asking about more than just tell me what hurts, are you feeling the baby move, how are you feeling? Taking the time to say, you know, how are you emotionally? How are you relating to this pregnancy? How's work going? What's your social life like now that you're pregnant? Tell me about your nutrition. So delving a little bit deeper into the lives of the pregnant women that they care for would be one of the major ways that the care differs for most women.
For a midwifery model of care.
Exactly.
And I do have an episode with Melissa Cheney on the different types, all about midwives, basically. So I'll link that in the show notes. But why don't we take a quick break right now? We'll be right back. It's tax season, flu season. I can't take much more of this cold weather season. And if you add being pregnant or in the fourth trimester to all that, you know that the overwhelm is real. And that eating well is critical in keeping you going and providing some love to your immune system. Green Chef can help you on both accounts by saving you time and helping you eat healthier. Plus, the recipes are super yummy. We recently got a box that included the pre-measured, perfectly proportioned, and mostly prepped ingredients for us to make some tempeh with mushrooms and XO sauce over udon noodles with edamame and bell peppers, as well as a butternut squash, red beets, and bell pepper roasted veggie plate with a risotto-like couscous and tahini sauce, and an Italian lentil ball soup with cashew parmesan, and a pesto crostini that was to die for, and got the seal of approval from both my husband and daughter. Green Chef's expert chefs design incredibly flavorful recipes for our vegan lifestyle that go beyond ordinary substitutions. I find that the pre-made sauces and dressings and spice mixes that are included in their recipes are consistently amazing, letting us get more flavor in less time and really making our home-cooked meals shine. Green Chef is a USDA-certified organic company with many different meal plan options that include paleo, vegan, vegetarian, pescatarian, Mediterranean, heart smart, lean and clean, keto, gluten-free, and omnivore. Green Chef does post their menus several weeks in advance, so you know what's coming. For example, if you order right now, you could soon be eating pan-seared barramundi with caper sauce, sautéed kale, roasted artichokes, and toasted almonds, or black-eyed peas veggie balls with tangy corn relish, broccoli, and caraway-spiced mustard aioli, or Philly-stuffed peppers with shaved steak and provolone filling, along with a butternut squash hash. There are so many good options to choose from. Let Green Chef do the meal planning, grocery shopping, and most of the prep for you week after week. Basically, let them solve your dinner problems. And to make this deliciousness even more enticing for Birthful listeners, get $50 off your first box of Green Chef when you go to greenchef.us/birthful. Note that that was not .com, but rather .us. So greenchef.us/birthful for $50 off your first box of Green Chef. Do this for yourself. Try a box of Green Chef today. And we're back talking with Robin Elise Weiss about choosing your care provider. We were talking about the different types of midwives and different types of care providers. And yeah, like you said, yeah, there's a huge variety of options in terms of how they practice and also how many practitioners are in the practice, because that's where really figuring out what you need or what's important to you, it makes sense, because you may have a midwifery group that has 10 midwives, so you're not quite sure who'll be there, or you might have a family practitioner who most likely, unless they're going on a trip usually, will be the person. So that is something I think people forget to take into account, that the number of practitioners that belong to the practice can differently change your model of care. Is it your experience that even within one practice, the type of care might be different?
Absolutely. So just because you have, even if it's a small practice, you could have two or three physicians and they practice very differently from one another. That was one of the biggest surprises when I first started working in birth, was how did these two physicians get together? Like, they have nothing in common other than this medical degree. It was really surprising to me. I just sort of thought, you know, like-minded individuals would find themselves together. And we know from the Listening to Mothers survey that many mothers who go to the hospital to have their baby wind up not having their care provider, whether it be because they're in a big practice and, you know, you've got nine doctors and, you know, whichever day you go in depends on the doctor on call, or perhaps your labor has spanned a length of time that means the doctor that you like is now off call and another doctor is on call that maybe you don't know as well. Or even in some cases, many hospitals are using what's called a hospitalist, meaning it's somebody that you didn't even have a chance to see, that they're not a part of your practitioner's practice, that they're hired by the hospital and they stay in-house and they only do labor and birth.
Mm-hmm. Yes, and that's popping up more and more, I find.
That is. And they're not, and I don't say that to make that seem like always a bad thing. In fact, in some ways, a hospitalist might be beneficial for some laboring women, but it's a surprise to many of the laboring women if a hospitalist shows up.
Mm-hmm. And yeah, there are definitely pros and cons to it in terms of how tired a practitioner, because they have specific shifts. So there are pros and cons to having that, as opposed to just say a physician from your practice that's on their 23rd hour and kind of running a little bit on empty. But the surprise factor is something that you want to take away from it. So having that interview where you ask if that's even a possibility can prepare you for it.
Absolutely. And that's also something that you need to ask when you're taking a tour of a hospital is, do they use hospitalists? Because sometimes the hospital will know, we don't today, but we will be in 3 months. And in 3 months is when you're thinking of, you know, when near your due month. And so you're about ready to have the baby then. And so it might be that your practitioner's not even thinking about it because it's coming down the line, you know, and they answer the question and today, no, we don't have hospitalists. So it's a question that you ask everywhere you go. The one time that hospitalists may work out really well for women is in the case of hospitals who have been a little more leery about providing vaginal birth after cesarean care or VBAC, because then they always have that physician in-house. And so that provides the hospital with a sense of safety and security that that person is always there, allowing the other practitioners that freedom to say, yes, we will take clients who are planning to have a VBAC.
Mm-hmm, because they can count on having somebody who can, in case of a cesarean, be there to do the cesarean.
Right.
Right. I never thought about that, of thinking of the hospitalist when I was preparing for this show. I considered all the ones off the bat, and it's true, the hospitalist model is coming up more and more. So is there any other sort of surprise or consideration mothers should have in that sense? Not with the hospitalist, but in terms of another practitioner or...
I think the surprise for most women is just many times they develop a relationship with one of many practitioners. And then, you know, sometimes at the end, well, they have this idea in the back of their head that maybe somebody else in the practice is going to be there, they really just push that aside. And then a couple of things can happen. One is that their practitioner can say, hey, I'm on call next Tuesday and you're 40 weeks. Why don't we induce you so I can be there? And that sounds like a reasonable option to most women, not understanding necessarily what all that entails, or what happens if the induction takes longer than their doctor's call schedule, as well as then just the stress of it.
Yes.
You know, I don't want to give birth on Tuesday because the physician that I'm not a big fan of is on call. And that stress that, you know, then when that mom does go into labor on Tuesday, she's sitting there completely stressed out about the doctor I don't like is on call.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and these are things that then when choosing a practice is important to consider, that you should feel comfortable with the possibility that any of these practitioners will be there for you.
Right.
Yeah. So, okay, now that we've kind of scared moms, let's bring it back.
Well, the good news is they have a lot of control over this.
Yes.
So it's not something to be frightened about. It's something to be informed about. And once you're informed and you know what you're looking for, then you can make active decisions to help you choose the practitioner that's right for you. And by doing that, you can set that tone, as we talked about before. So the key is really going to be doing those interviews. Now, ideally, women would do these prior to getting pregnant. And that's the hard part. But I will tell you, it's really hard to do this during an annual pap smear type of visit. I encourage women to have these conversations with their clothes on, as opposed to sitting on paper napkins dressed in paper gowns. So this is something that you want to start talking to people. Hey, talk to me about your birth. Okay, you had a great experience with Dr. X. Tell me, what was great about it? Or you had a negative experience. Like, tell me, what didn't you like? Because just because somebody didn't like it doesn't mean it's not what you would like. And I know that sounds a little bit backwards, but we have to remember that everybody may want something a little bit different. And so it's important to realize that those differences, there's somebody for everyone. And one person's ideal birth is another person's nightmare, so to speak. But, you know, asking those tough questions about, you know, we've already covered, you know, who are your backups? And the same goes for midwives. Who are your backups? You know, and who will come with you in the case of midwife if you're having a home birth? Who else will you bring with you to my home? Who are your assistants or who are the other midwives who will come? Asking whether they recommend childbirth classes or the use of doulas, professional labor support. And I think those are red flags if they tell you that you don't need those, that they will take care of you, simply because a well-educated, well-supported mom, no matter what her choices are, is always going to be easier on a well-informed practitioner, because they're not going to have to do the education for the mom in the moment.
And because the time they have with them is so limited that there's only so much education they can give them.
Exactly. And so if that's not the, if you don't want the pat on the head, don't worry your pretty little head about this, leave this to the professionals kind of care, then that's certainly the practitioner that you want. But for women who want to have some choice in the matter and some say and some preference in what they do, that might not be a good match for them. Some practices actually have a panel discussion where one night a month they will bring almost all the practitioners. Now, obviously, someone may be off catching a baby, but they'll bring everybody into a room and they'll let you come and sort of do a panel, ask us questions, let us talk to you about our philosophy of prenatal care and of pregnancy and birth, and so you get a really good idea.
That sounds like really good. I don't think we have any practices around here that do those panels.
We don't have too many, but yeah. I'm hoping that public opinion will sway others.
And it would make sense, because otherwise they're doing one-on-one interviews really often. Mm-hmm. So if they have sort of that open house night, they can reach a lot more people in a more efficient way, for sure. Yeah.
Well, and the nice thing is you can ask questions or hear questions that other people are asking. So, for example, if there's a question that you're just frightened to ask, for all you know, somebody else has the same question and they ask the question and the conversation gets going, and then that feels a lot better for them to do. And having practitioners that, you know, basically what I try and explain to women is what it boils down to is you have to be able to trust this practitioner in the heat of the moment when they say go, you need to go. And if you don't have that, if you can't talk to this person about intimate details about your life, how are you going to be able to trust them with your care?
Absolutely.
In an emergency. And if you can't even be honest with them about, you know, how many times you eat ice cream or details of your sex life, you know, I'm always asking women, if you can't have this conversation with your practitioner, how can you trust them? And how can they trust you? And it's got to be that two-way street.
That's a great consideration. Let's take a quick break. But when we come back, let's get right to the questions that the people can ask their care providers to see the care provider that they're interviewing to see if they're a good fit. We'll be right back. Honoring the postpartum recovery is so necessary, and taking a postpartum herbal bath from Birthsong Botanicals can be a very relaxing and healing part of that recovery. And you may be thinking, you want me to take a bath in herbs? Yes, yes I do. And actually not just you, but you and your baby, because postpartum herb baths can soothe your sore perineal muscles and hemorrhoids, slow down bleeding, minimize swelling, and help dry your newborn's umbilical cord. All while creating a relaxing and restoring bonding experience between the two of you. Birthsong Botanicals was founded by midwife Maria Chowdhury, who has attended hundreds of births and has seen firsthand the incredible difference in the healing process from the people who take baths and the herbs versus the ones who don't. Basically, your perineum's gonna thank you. These postpartum herb baths promote healing regardless of how you give birth or whether you have stitches or not. In case of a cesarean birth where staples were used, it's recommended to wait until the staples have been removed before doing the postpartum herb bath. In any case, it's always good to double check with your trusted health practitioner. You know, the one you trust that we've been talking about? If you're concerned about the umbilical cord, the idea here is that you're not just getting it wet. Since this is an herbal bath made with therapeutic herbs, it is designed to aid the body's recovery process, and that includes helping in the healing of the umbilical cord. Maria tells me that when the baby gets immediately out of the bath, the cord might look wet, which is normal, but that with the recommended 3 to 5 baths, the cord tends to fall off in a few days. Basically, more than a relaxing bath, this is herbal medicine. Give your postpartum body some healing love. Go check out the postpartum herb bath at birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. That's birthsongbotanicals.com with the code BIRTHFUL for 10% off. And we're back talking with Robin Elise Weiss about choosing your care provider. So, Robin, let's say that people have taken their early pregnancy class and they have read and learned, you know, informed themselves about pregnancy and childbirth and have decided to interview a few practitioners and have an idea of what they want. What are some of those good questions they ask to figure out who's the best fit for them?
Well, I think some of the questions that they need to ask are what I call business questions. So, for example, do you take my insurance? If not, talk to me about billing. What types of prenatal testing do you do? What are your office hours? Things of that nature, because that will matter. If you have a job where you absolutely need somebody who has evening hours, you're not going to be able to go to somebody who doesn't have evening hours without some special consideration. So you certainly have to ask those questions. But after that, you want to ask questions that get to the heart of your relationship. So what types of, what are the requirements that you have of me when I'm pregnant? What can I expect of you? Asking them straight up, you know, what will you provide me while I'm pregnant? Then asking them some questions that are more statistically based. So, for example, one of the really important questions that a lot of moms want to know is, what is somebody's cesarean rate? But that's a little bit of a tricky number. So I encourage moms to ask their practitioners instead, what is their primary cesarean rate? And the primary cesarean rate is the number of first-time cesareans that are done, because that number is going to be a little bit more accurate in terms of what your risk as a first-time mother is of having a cesarean. So, for example, if you just ask what a cesarean rate is, that is going to include mothers who are having their second or third cesarean that maybe have opted not to have a vaginal birth after cesarean. And so that might falsely inflate that rate. I always encourage women, whether they seem interested or not in having an unmedicated birth, to ask the provider what percentage of women have an unmedicated birth in their practice. And the reason I do that is because how you feel at 5 or 6 weeks or 8 weeks pregnant might be vastly different than how you feel at 34 or 36 weeks pregnant. And you may change your mind and decide that what you wanted at 4 or 6 weeks is very different later in pregnancy. And so you need a practitioner who can support you in either direction. So not somebody who is just, there's a difference between being tolerant and being supportive. And that number may help you decide whether that person falls into the tolerant category or the supportive category.
Absolutely. No, that's a great point. And it goes back to you being able to click with your provider, having that trust. You know, it's how they make you feel as well.
Exactly. You also need to ask your provider where they provide services. Many times you will have a choice between one or two hospitals. And if you have more of a choice than that, it's important that you actually go and choose not only your provider, but the places that they provide services and take those tours and look around. So I always encourage people to understand that the bed sheet they pull out in hospitals, that Laura Ashley or, you know, some big fancy bedspread, the only one they own, and you will not see it when you're giving birth. Things look a little bit different on a tour than they do when you're actually in labor. So to keep that in mind.
Mm-hmm. And it can be significant. I mean, and your provider might be tied to that. I, as a doula, I'm more familiar with the different hospital settings around. And I know, for example, the care or the path of your labor is going to be different because one hospital has wireless monitoring, so a telemetry unit. And you can, even if you were to have continuous fetal monitoring, you can walk around the halls, you can get in the tub with it, as opposed to the hospital that only has hooked up units. So that means that you will be limited to walking and moving around the bed.
Exactly.
It's something as simple as that is just the technology or the equipment that's available, whether they have birth bars or squat bars or not, will change what's available and an option for you during your labor.
I've even started telling my mothers who are my doula clients here locally who do not have providers yet, that perhaps they should start by touring the facilities, find out what hospitals routinely do skin-to-skin immediately after birth, who has what rate of cesarean, who has what epidural rate, you know, who has 24-hour OB anesthesia. Like, look at what's available. Who has tubs that you can labor in? How often are they used? Look around there, and when you find a place that has a lot of options, typically the places that have a lot of options that are actively in use, which is the key here, they're going to have a list of physicians who are probably going to be more open to a variety of different types of birth than a place that doesn't have as many options. So if a squat bar is what one hospital has and another hospital has squat bars, birth balls, peanut balls, and tubs that you can labor in, that hospital, that second hospital, is probably going to have practitioners who are more open to a variety of options. And so it's almost the process in reverse. And the same is true if you have an area where you have birth centers available. I encourage everybody to check out all of their options. Here's the thing, you look at something and you decide you don't like it, check it off your list. But the thing is, if you never look, then you have no idea. And you might say later, I really wish I would have gone to look at it. Whereas if you go and look, you've spent an hour. And if you choose it, wonderful. If you don't, wonderful, you've checked it off your list.
Mm-hmm. And it can help narrow down your choices, like you're saying, by first checking off that, oh, this is not something I want. But also, if you find a place that you like, then you can say, okay, now what is the list of providers that practice here? And then those are the ones I'm trying to find one that fits me within that list, and which is less than all the providers in my city.
Right. And the other thing is, if you hear a provider's name who comes up a lot, in a positive way, that's a good indication that maybe that's somebody in a positive way, in a way that would be positive for you, you know, in some type of positive criteria that you've set forth. That's somebody that you probably want to give a little bit more of a look at.
Absolutely.
But the other thing I want to tell people is that you are also not married to this person. It is very, very easy to leave your provider in terms of paperwork. Emotionally, it's a little bit more difficult. A lot of moms will say, well, I'll just stick through it in this pregnancy. And sometimes that's really frustrating because you know that another provider would have no problem doing exactly what they want. And they just, that overcoming inertia, well, I already have the next appointment made. The moms I've had who've switched providers, even as late as the 41st week of pregnancy, have all been very glad that they've changed providers. Some have avoided unnecessary cesareans. Some have, you know, just had more respectful care, but they have all been very, very grateful that they made that change.
Mm-hmm. And it's great to bring that up, that it's never too late to switch. And maybe that initial choice wasn't the best fit, or you didn't think about it before then. But if you're going to your practice and you start, I always talk about the red flags. If mm-hmm. red flags start appearing during the prenatals, you can bet that red flags, you know, something won't be as fun and great during the birth. To listen
exactly.
to that intuition. Yeah.
And that's an important thing, is that your insurance is used to people switching providers, and, you know, ask for a copy of your medical records. I encourage people to send a letter explaining to the practice why they've left. Many people are worried that the old practitioner will somehow have their feelings hurt. I usually do not find that to be the case. Most of the time, the women tell me that they don't think the other practitioner even noticed that they were gone. And that further solidified their need to move.
Yes.
You know, they felt like, I've had people say, you know, I felt like my practitioner couldn't remember my name, you know, called me by a diminutive form of my name every time they walked in the room, even though I corrected them every time and said, you know, no, that's not my name. This is my name.
Mm-hmm. Right. So, yeah, that doesn't feel good.
Right. Or having to remind them, no, remember, I'm so, or, you know, I've got such and such going on, so that doesn't, you know, that's not part and parcel of me. So finding practitioners who are supportive of you as a person and make you feel that connection is an important part of it. That's the touchy-feely part that's a little bit harder. You can't say, well, ask these 5 questions and it will tell you whether or not you have a good match. Some of it is just strictly intuition. And that can be a hard thing to put your finger on.
Mm-hmm. That's why those red flags are so important, because if you're feeling uncomfortable, then your body's telling you, please, let's get out of here. Please, let's switch. You listen
right.
to that
I
body.
Right. If your practitioner is early on saying, well, we may have to induce you, there are very few things you would know at 10 or 15 weeks gestation that would indicate you would need to be induced. I remember at one point I actually was seeing a practitioner for one of my own pregnancies, and I made an appointment to come back the following week for my prenatal appointment, and it was my 20th week visit, and the woman said, wow, we never see anyone here who's 40 weeks pregnant. I didn't know what to say. I was like, okay, like, that's really interesting. Like, what does it say? Like, I don't, you know, I just remember being really speechless. And I think I finally muttered something like, that's a shame. But, you know, I mean, I was an office celebrity for, you know, hitting 41 weeks and, you know, still being pregnant.
That tells you so much about the practice. And it's more of that.
It really does.
Yeah, it's reading between the lines. It's not what they say, but how they say it and what it implies. Ugh, it's harder. Such a hard decision when you're in
well,
it.
Well, and I think it really boils down to what is your practitioner's philosophy of birth and pregnancy? Do they see it as a medical emergency waiting to happen? Or do they see it as, you know, you're a normal, healthy woman going through a normal, healthy process, and they're just the lifeguard? You know, they're just sitting there kind of watching and monitoring you and, you know, pretty much hands-off letting the process go and making sure that you're staying within safe boundaries.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And, you know, if you have somebody who is saying from the moment, I had a client the other day who was telling me, you know, that her practitioner had told her prior to her even getting pregnant that she probably, you know, would have a miscarriage right away.
Wow.
And I said, oh, like, that sounds really serious. Like, what's going on that she would say that? She said, I asked her that. And she said, oh, it's just a feeling I have.
Wow.
And I said, well, how did that make you feel? And she said, kind of scared. And I said, you know, and after she, you know, after she had been pregnant and, you know, and we talked a little bit more, she had said, you know, I'm so glad she made the decision on her own to leave that practitioner and said, you know, I'm so glad I left them because if they scared me before I was pregnant, you know, what would they do to me while I was pregnant?
Exactly. And the thing is, like, for some of them, they do this in and out, and depends, again, what they're feeling about birth. So if they're just, that's what they do, and that's how they do. But anecdotally and research tells us moms remember their birth stories almost forever. You carry that with you. So important.
Yes.
So
Very important.
Yeah. So like you were mentioning before of thinking, I'm not going to switch because, oh, I'll, you know, I'm already here next pregnancy. But this pregnancy is just as important and you will carry this experience and it will affect how you mother and how you even how you feel about the next pregnancy.
Absolutely. And, you know, one of the things that you can use as a guide when you're asking practitioners about their philosophy and about what they do. Lamaze has something called the 6 Healthy Birth Practices that you can find at lamaze.org. And there are 6 things that are evidence-based, so they show you, you know, if you follow these 6 guidelines, then you will have the healthiest, safest birth possible. And just asking your practitioner, you know, do you do these things? For example, 1 is let labor begin on its own. How often do people in your practice require an induction of labor? You know, asking them, do you have people who make 40-week appointments? Or is that the rarity? You know, and, you know, that 6 healthy birth practices, keeping mom and baby together. You know, how often do babies go straight to mom and lay skin to skin with mom after birth in your practice? Is that commonplace? You know, those are the types of questions that can quickly and easily help you figure out, you know.
Would you mind going through the 6 care practices?
No, not at all. So, again, the first one is let labor begin on its own, which is talking about the induction rate. You know, labor is healthier when it starts on its own. You don't need to have an induction for the vast majority of healthy women. The second healthy birth practice is to walk, move around, and change positions throughout your labor. Just using that process of movement to help speed labor, to help comfort mom, and to help that baby move down. The third practice is to bring a loved one, friend, or doula for continuous support. We know that there's nothing like having that continuous emotional and informational support when a mom is in labor. The fourth practice is avoiding interventions that are not medically necessary. And notice it doesn't say avoiding interventions. It says avoiding ones that aren't medically necessary. So asking your practitioner, you're saying that you want to break my water, but is that because you break everybody's water at this point, or is there a specific need for me and my baby? So just avoiding ones that aren't medically necessary for you. And then avoid giving birth on your back and following your body's natural instinct to push would be the fifth birth practice. So using upright positions, using gravity to help progress that second stage, that pushing phase of labor, and to allow mom to push as her body urges her to do so, as opposed to what we see on TV, the hold your breath and purple push, count to 10, a lot of cheerleading going on. And then the sixth practice of keeping mom and baby together after the birth, skin to skin, to promote bonding and breastfeeding.
Thank you. And having those practices in mind, the healthy care practices can also help those moms that, you know, because some moms out there, just because of where they live, are not going to have necessarily all the greatest choices. There might not be a birth center in their area, even though they would love a birth center. They might, the hospital that they need to go to may, you know, have a laborist model and a hospitalist model, and that's what's going to happen. So looking at the care practices in light of what those choices might be can help in the case of, say, for example, a hospitalist, then having a doula or having a continuous support person or a bigger, you know, very encouraging support team can be more important for that mom in her situation.
Absolutely. And it just helps spark questions when you look at them that way. So, for example, if you're talking about using upright positioning to give birth, you know, well, do you have a squat bar? How will you help me be upright? Do your beds move? What positions do women give birth in your practice or in this facility? So I find that there are six really simple things that help moms spark their own questions.
Mm-hmm. Are there any other questions that moms should keep in mind to ask that we've left out?
I mean, there are lists and lists of questions that you can look at. I think it's more about having the conversation and getting that gut feel. Mm-hmm. I think every mom will have a couple of questions that are really important to her. And I think that's more important than even going in with a list of, you know, 50 questions. I encourage people to look at the list of questions and that you can go to, you know, on many of the pregnancy sites when you're thinking about what to ask your practitioner. And then, you know, looking through the list and thinking, which of these are most important to me? And then asking those questions.
Yes, and then that will certainly help them get on their way to get the provider that's right for them, because they're starting from their uniqueness and their unique wishes for birth, because every single birth is so different.
Right. It really is. And everybody, you know, everybody has got, you know, basically you have to be able to call this person in the middle of the night and ask them really, really, you know, sensitive questions. You might be leaking fluids out of parts of your body you don't like to discuss with strangers. You know, you need to feel comfortable doing that. If you're hesitant to call somebody because you don't want to bother them, you know, which to me says there's something going on in that relationship, then that's not, you know, then that's probably not the practitioner for you.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Fantastic. And you mentioned the six healthy care practices. I will link to those in the show notes also so that listeners can follow through. Is there, and then Lamaze, obviously, we'll link to the Lamaze parenting site. Any other links that we should add to these show notes?
I certainly have a list of questions for both hospital tours as well as practitioners, and some information on things like five reasons you may want to use a midwife or reasons to go to a birth center at my site, pregnancy.about.com.
and which is a fantastic site that I encourage people to go through deeply. And because how long have you been writing for that site?
I've actually been writing for that site since 1997.
Yes. I mean, 1997 is the way beginning of the internet here.
Yeah, well, I've been online for even longer than that, but I've been with them. They went live in 1997, so I've been with them since they went live.
So, listeners, the amount of articles that Robin has written on pregnancy, you can spend days reading and getting answers from her. So I encourage you to do that because, you know, this show is only less than an hour long. And Robin, if they want to get in touch with you, contact you, follow what you're doing, how can they do that?
They can follow me on Twitter at Robin Pregnancy. They can find my email and other contact information at pregnancy.about.com or robineliseweiss.com.
Fantastic. Thank you so, so much for being here on the show today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you for having me.
Mighty Ones, find the in-depth show notes for this episode at birthful.com, where you can also learn more about me, the show, Patreon member benefits, send me messages, and more. For this episode's extra content, I created a handout with the list of questions to ask your provider, along with other suggestions made during our talk. To get a copy, join the Birthful supporters community over at patreon.com/birthful. You're going to get access to this extra content, along with all future extra content, as long as you're a Birthful patron. Sometimes I post extra audio. Sometimes it's brand new handouts like this week. Sometimes it's a little doula musing videos of my ideas and other things that happen away from the podcast. Plus, I've also started posting ad-free versions of the episodes if that's your thing. And through Patreon, you can get your own RSS feed so you can plug that into your podcast player if you're a tech savvy like that. Rewards start at $5 a month, which is basically less than a fancy coffee drink. Find out more at patreon.com/birthful. Now, if what you want to do is get ready for life with a newborn, then go to birthfulcourses.com and sign up for My Thrive with your newborn online postpartum preparation classes. This episode was produced by me and made possible by you, those amazing Birthful Patreon supporters, and by the wonderful people at Green Chef and Birth Song Botanicals. Go to greenchef.us/birthful for $50 off your first box of Green Chef, and go to birthsongbotanicals.com and use the code birthful for 10% off your postpartum herb baths. The title song for this podcast is Vive Ace by Kevin McLeod, and the sponsorship song is Air Hockey Saloon by Chris Zabriskie. Find them both at freemusicarchive.org. Also, the Birthful Podcast is part of the Parents on Demand Network, a network of podcasts focused on parents. Download the free Parents on Demand app on Apple and Android for easy on-the-go listening. I'm Adriana Losada. Please join me next week when I'll be talking to a mighty parent as they share their amazing story here at the Birthful Podcast. Thanks so very much for listening. This episode is copyright 2019 by Adriana Losada.